Small businesses are the cornerstones of our local communities, and small business owners are hardworking and passionate people who are chasing down their ambitions while there's a lot on the line. So, let Verizon champion your small business dreams. Whether you own a small business, are scaling one, or starting one from scratch, you need Verizon Small Business Days. From April 22nd through April 28th, you can partner with Verizon business experts for small business support. During Verizon Small Business Days, you can receive a free tech check with a one-on-one meeting with a Verizon business expert. Plus, Verizon business experts will provide you with personalized advice and solutions that are tailored to your specific small business needs. Take advantage of special offers and deals during Verizon Small Business Days and get more for your business. Verizon, well, they've got you back. Don't miss out. Book an appointment today. Just call 1-800-483-4428 or go to verizon.com/small business.
So why do you want to learn a new language?
I'll tell you why. Because ¿dónde está el baño? Can be a very important question at times. You know, Rosetta Stone is the most trusted language learning program, available on desktop or as an app. Fast track your language acquisition with immersive lessons designed to teach you to pick up languages in a natural way. I love the fact that I can go from my laptop to my phone to pretty much anywhere and learn the language of my choice. Not to mention, I'm bringing my communication skills to new heights. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. For a limited time, StarTalk Radio listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/starttalk. That's 50% off unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/starttalk today.
From the American Museum of Natural History in New York City and beaming out across all of space and time, this is Star Talk, where science and pop culture collide. This is Star Talk. I'm Neil deGrasse Tyson, your personal astrophysicist, coming to you from my office at the Hayden Planetarium, right here in New York City. I got Chuck Nice. Chuck!
Hey, what's happening, Neil?
You're my man.
That's right.
Tweeting a Chuck Nice comic.
Thank you, sir.
And I went over another Chuck. You're also a Chuck.
That's right. I can be a Chuck.
We call you Charles, but you, in your day, you were Chuck.
Yes.
I ain't calling you Chuck because that's my Chuck.
Fair enough.
All right. I got Charles Liu on the line here because he just published a book, except he doesn't have the book for me to show. How do you like that? Charles, the name of your book.
Yes. It is 32nd Universe. And
wait, you know 31 other universes?
A 32nd universe.
It would be nice. I would enjoy that. Well, there's the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Oh,
there's the Marvel regular universe, the DC universe.
You had an answer to
that's
that.
Right.
Well, no, no. Look, thank you so much.
There's the 100-acre wood.
That's right.
Right. There's all these universes.
All these universes.
Where the laws of physics are not quite all there.
That's
nice.
Right, you know? But it's very nice. And yes, this book is out, and I'm very, very
and who's
lucky.
The publisher?
Ivy Press.
Ivy Press, good.
Which, yes. And let me give a shout out to my co-authors as well, Karen Masters, who is at Haverford.
Nice.
And Savil Salur at Rutgers.
Mm-hmm. Oh, cool.
And the editor, Stephanie
Haverford
Evans.
And Rutgers are universities.
The universities, yes.
They're not just towns on a map
yes,
or anything.
Yes, that's right. That's right. And then Stephanie Evans, who was the editor extraordinaire. It was really a wonderful team effort. I was very,
let
very
know
fortunate
how to kiss
to be
ass.
Part of it.
I'm telling you. I'm like
extraordinary editor.
I'm like, why am I not helping him write a book? when Chuck Liu does a book, it's like Wu-Tang wrote a book.
It's so true, though. These things are works that are really team efforts.
Yeah,
there's
yeah.
no question about it.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I would be foolish to imagine that it was all me. It's not. Absolutely not.
Plus, my editors make me say what I mean and mean what I say.
Yeah.
Nice.
Good way to put it.
That's a good way to do that. Yeah. So now, what is the 32nd part?
It's 30 seconds. So that means that you're actually supposed to think about or answer questions or consider topics 30 seconds at a time.
So you have parceled your content
right
in 30-second increments.
That's right. Each is basically one small page of text, and you also have a brief sort of summary that might be only 3 seconds.
So there's a topic that you're about to explain in 30 seconds.
That's right.
And you do this on every page of the book.
On every page of the book.
Wow. There's
30 seconds.
How many pages?
50.
50. So this should take 25 minutes to read.
Yes.
Wow.
The goal is to keep
that. Look at you.
Yes,
you wow, that was quick. I'm telling you.
Am I quick?
Oh, boy, God.
That's why I'm in this seat and you in that seat.
You're a regular Texas instrument. Man.
Yeah. There's also biographies and there's other comments, people you can look at, and there's beautiful artwork on every spread as well.
Oh, cool. So you didn't mention the artist.
Ah, yes, Stephen Rawlings.
Stephen Rawlings,
yeah,
very nice.
Really talented person.
Right.
Art, just great people.
The art just makes the page.
It really does.
It makes it tastier
right.
to the eye.
Excellent. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah, yeah. So we're going to do, in honor of the release of your book, which we don't have a copy of.
Sorry.
We're going to.
But thank you.
We're going to, we solicited questions from our fan base.
Right.
To say
any question that could be answered in 30 seconds by you guys.
Oh,
so it's a
it's his damn book.
Well, no. It's the two of you now. Sorry. I mean,
team effort. Yeah. Collaboration.
Exactly.
How about this? How about
you're
this?
Not getting out of this.
You're like, it's his book.
Okay. Well, no, how about this? How about this? If I can answer it in less time,
right?
Then it's a it's a cage match.
It's a throwdown.
Throwdown.
Oh,
how about that?
Man.
Oh, let me get my timer. Yo, that's cool.
Ouch.
But the person who goes second actually has an advantage because what you're doing is, I mean, both of you will always know the right answer.
Yeah.
So
we
the
presume.
Second person will only have to condense the first person's answer.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, why do you give away my advantage?
But let me say also, Chuck, we both might not know the answer. There's plenty I don't know that Neil does know. And I would very much like to learn or get questions from people that I don't know the answer to so I can go think about it. I think that'd be great.
Well,
you know. And what are the chances of that? So, Chuck, you got the question.
All right. So, all right, just
bring
like
them on.
With all of our cosmic queries, we, glean these from all over the internet. And as usual, we start with a Patreon patron.
A Patreon patron,
right. Because Patreon patrons actually support us financially.
All right,
here we go. Here's our first question from Renee Douglas, who is our Patreon patron. Renee, thank you. How much mass is needed for a planetary body to make itself round? Is there an equation?
Ooh. Charles, go for it.
And I got to add a follow-up. Yeah. And is that affected by the mass of nearby objects and the gravity associated?
He's up to complicating it. I don't know if that's allowed.
All right, I shouldn't complicate.
Judges, is that allowed?
You know what? Yeah. All right, let's answer Renee's question. I think it's a great question, it just sparked that in me.
Charles, go.
Simple question answer is that, yes, there is an equation. It's called the equation of hydrostatic equilibrium. It assumes that if the object were able to move freely and were only held together primarily by gravity, how much mass would be necessary? And it depends on the density. It depends on certain other aspects of things. But in the end, it's about a few hundred miles, maybe 1,000 miles around. For example, Ceres, the largest asteroid in our solar system, is not quite 1,000 miles. It's like 500 or 600 miles across, and it is completely round. So there is a range, maybe 100-ish miles, where you're really starting to see things come around and become round. As for objects being nearby affecting the roundness of an object, you have to be really, really close in order to disrupt the general hydrostatic equilibrium activities of an object free-floating in space or even in orbit around something like a sun or another planet. Neil, am I correct?
I give him an A-.
Uh-oh.
There's a minus
here. I'll take it.
A-.
All right.
You ain't never got an A- in your life.
Oh.
Don't even. You were sad. I just gave you an A-. Tell me, Charles, how many A- did you get in your life?
There have been a few.
Mm-hmm. And did you contest them all? Were you that student?
I don't understand how I got an A-.
No. At some point, you don't contest because you just know you're right and the teacher just got it wrong. You just move on.
No.
Right. That can happen.
That's great.
For my final exams, I would go to my professors. I did go to every professor and ask them to explain to me what I did wrong. Mm-hmm. And that is true. And for that, I'm grateful that the professors spent the time to do that. Because in the end, nobody cares anymore, except you, Neil, whether I ever got an A-, right?
It's whether or not you know the stuff.
Nobody cares.
Yeah, I don't care.
And so the matter fundamentally was, did I learn it? Right. And so if I made a mistake and the professor, I still remember a professor of, actually several professors of mine who actually took the time, you know, after the final exam when they could have just packed up and taken off. Mm-hmm. And
see,
they said,
teachers,
okay, do this and this and this. I really was grateful for that.
My teachers, their response was, you know, it's really difficult to cover all the coursework to bring this D into some type of reasonable explanation as to why you received it.
So you had some did pass. The D. I did pass the class. So Charles, let me explain why it was A minus and not A plus.
Fair enough.
Okay.
Thanks, Professor.
The premise of hydrostatic equilibrium presupposes that everything is just sort of held together by gravity. Mm-hmm. If that's the case, you can get a sphere of any mass.
As what long as it's sufficiently isolated.
Right, but what I'm saying is, if the structural integrity of rocks is greater than the ability of gravity to do anything with the rocks, your object in space is the shape of the rock.
Good point.
Period.
Right.
Period.
So that's why, for example, Mount Everest still exists.
Right. Exactly. Yeah,
it's because the structure of the rock is preventing it from becoming
correct.
A sphere.
So there's a size above which the total collection of whatever it is you've got fails in the face of the forces of gravity. It cannot hold up whatever shape it wanted in the face of the forces of gravity. Gravity then tries to get every bit of it as close to the center of the object as it can, right. And there's only one shape that that makes.
And that's always a sphere.
And that's a sphere.
Always.
And Earth, even with Mount Everest, is a damn good sphere. Mm. Can I tell you how damn good it is?
Go ahead.
It's not just good.
Go ahead.
It's not just good.
All right.
It is damn good.
Damn good.
Good. Mm. Okay, so what's the lowest point of Earth's crust?
Oh, it's about the Mariana's Trench, probably, about 6 or 7 miles down.
So six or 7 miles down.
Right.
Highest point on Earth's crust?
Mount Everest.
Mount Everest. Yeah. How high
about
up is it?
About 6 or 7 miles up.
Add the 6 or 7 miles up, 6 or 7 miles down, you get 13 miles.
Right.
That is the length of Manhattan Island.
Okay.
So the entire range of texture on Earth's surface fits within 13 miles on an 8,000-mile diameter planet.
Wow.
That's pretty good.
So if you shrunk Earth to the size of a cue ball, it'd be one of the smoothest cue balls ever machined.
Exactly right, yeah.
And we say, oh, the high mountains, low valleys ain't nothing compared to the size of this planet. And that's why it looks flat to some people.
Wow.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yes. That's the reason.
That's
well,
it.
Well, that's one of
them.
Yeah.
Okay.
So all I'm saying is gravity would make something small round.
That's true.
You have to compare it to whatever the other forces are operating.
Well, hey, does that mean that the little curly Q balls of, like, say, water floating around International Space Station.
No, so those are not.
Those are not hydrostatically equilibrated.
No, those are not gravitationally.
Those are surface tension.
That's all surface tension.
So it's just, is that, now wait, so is that because the molecules have no place to go except there? Except in that
form? Because
every
molecule has an attraction to every neighboring molecule.
Right.
And if all molecules attract all other molecules and they're free floating, they make a sphere.
Which is why air makes a sphere underwater. So it's the same thing. The water in space, air underwater, wouldn't that be the same?
Almost. It's a little bit different because you've got buoyancy going on.
All
see,
right.
The air is less dense than the water.
Correct.
And as a result, there is a force.
So the water.
Wait. Charles, you get a sphere even if there's no net force of gravity in the water. I'm pretty sure.
If you sphere and then you take a straw and push, you know, say, blow an air bubble inside a sphere of water floating, say, in the International Space Station, it would be spherical on the inside as well. Yeah.
Right. But I think it would be spherical on Earth, even with 1G force. Right. So in the space station, you're agreeing that it would still make a sphere inside. It wouldn't know where to go.
Just stay there.
Right.
But the buoyancy, even without the buoyancy,
so here's
it doesn't
the
make
point.
A difference. Gotcha.
With no other net force of gravity, the surface tension wins, and it's another attractive force. Like gravity is an attractive force, and it makes things spheres.
Right.
Okay? Mm-hmm. Surface tension also shows up in soap bubbles.
Okay.
It's the surface tension of the liquid of the glycerin.
That's why when you blow the soap bubble, it's round,
right?
And it floats.
Yeah, there are no cubes.
If you're really good.
No. You can have a square soap bubble maker, and what comes out of it
is a sphere.
That's correct.
However, you're absolutely
there's no
right.
However because, to that sentence.
No, there isn't. I was going to say, though, however, you can see the surface tension at work before it creates the sphere. So if you have a giant hoop and you just keep it like moving
keep going all the time.
It's beautiful, then you'll just get iridescent. A big
wavy, it starts as wavy thing, but if it's left to its own devices, it'll come back to a sphere.
Do you know how you can make a square, a cubic soap bubble?
What?
You blow six round soap bubbles around the outside and the seventh one in the middle that's formed by the result of the other six can be a cube.
Oh, wow.
You have power over soap bubbles.
I'm not the guy. I saw it once. Well, I can't believe we got it done.
It's amazing.
We're,
we have totally let go of the premise of the show.
We were supposed to do everything we just did for 30 seconds.
All right. Okay.
We've answered like 20, 30 seconds.
Since we've busted all the rules, let me just finish this out.
Go ahead.
So water makes a perfect sphere in a zero-G environment. Okay. Because surface tension wins. If you bring it to 1G, gravity wins, and then the water just flattens out.
Right.
Okay? Now, we are not spheres. Most of us are not spheres.
Right.
Because we are not held together by gravity.
Right.
Or by surface tension.
No, we're not.
We're held together by intermolecular forces of our flesh.
Right.
Okay? And that is stronger than the gravity exhibited here on the surface of the Earth, which is why we can stand up and walk.
Right.
And not just fall down into a pile of goo or a puddle of fluid like a sphere of water would do.
It is a testament to the strength of the electromagnetic force compared to gravity that we can have this
Send Chuck to a neutron star.
We went in a completely different direction
Send Chuck to a neutron star.
Yeah,
put them on the surface.
Onto the surface of a neutron star.
Right.
Your head will feel so much less gravitational acceleration than your feet that you will literally be squished like a pancake.
Nice.
Meanwhile, if you are on your way falling down, your toes will actually be pulled toward the surface faster than your head will, so you'll actually be elongated.
Wait, that's if he's falling towards it.
That's right.
I'm just saying, put him on the surface.
I'm saying, put him on the surface, he flattens out.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah, because the gravitational force on the surface
is so. They're so strong.
They're higher than your the
structural integrity of your body.
And well, is there anything that wouldn't flatten out? And so look at all the structural integrities of things on Earth.
The material of a neutron star itself.
Oh.
Yeah. If you put a neutron...
How's that for a cop-out answer?
Okay, that reminds me of the joke that says, so after every plane crash, they find a black box. Why don't they just make the plane out of the black box?
Yeah, well.
All right. Wow, man, that was a lot out of one little question.
Yeah, we totally
How much mass is needed for a planetary body to make itself round? So the answer, Renee, is 42.
The specific answer to that question,
the fair answer is
that if the object is made of rock, it's a couple of hundred
miles. It's a few hundred miles.
Worth of rock. Yeah.
There
and whatever mass.
If it's made of water, it can be any size at all.
Any size at once.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Okay, cool. All right,
Chuck, another question. We gotta live by the rules.
Yeah, let's live by the rules.
30-second universe.
Well, I don't mind if we actually expound on the question afterwards. We just gotta answer it in 30 seconds.
Very good.
Okay, here we go.
Didn't I do that?
Yeah, you did.
I think you did.
No, in fairness. It's just that we answered seven questions.
Okay. Which
here
is
we
great.
Go. Salvador Bella wants to know this.
Ooh, love that name.
Salvador Bella. Is bald the best hairdo for zero G?
We will answer that when we return.
After
our first break on this special episode celebrating the release of Charles Liu's book, The 30-Second Universe. See you in a moment.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively, FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want him to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Star Talk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
This is Star Talk.
We're back answering questions in 30 seconds. Why? Because Charles Liu has a book out called The 30-Second Universe, where he and two co-authors do just that on every page. Now, Chuck, we left off.
Yes.
If you've tuned in, we left off with Salvatore.
We said bello, but it's bello. He is indeed Spanish.
How do you know?
Because he wrote me a note that said, okay. He said, if Chuck is reading this, the two L's make the Y sound.
Oh, so that's a Spanish.
So it's bello, so he's Spanish.
Communication.
Yes.
Salvador Bello. Charles read that.
And Charles
like a book
knew the
right
deal.
There.
He knew it.
Very good, Charles. Because like, Salvatore.
Exactly.
Go
so
for
his
it.
Question was, is bald the best hairdo for zero G?
No.
Charles.
Buzz cut's better. Bald is good because it won't fly in your face.
Right.
But actually, the helmet material will stick to your head. And if you sweat, then you don't have like this extra little cushion. So you have a little bit of hair, all right? Maybe a centimeter's worth all around. And that sort of cushions and makes you more comfortable.
Well, that's if you're spacewalking.
If you're in any zero-G environment.
No, Wait. If I'm just floating in the space station, I'm not wearing a helmet.
Okay, fair enough. But then you've got, but then sooner or later you're going to put a helmet on, right?
I guess so.
When you go up or when you come down or when you're out taking a
space. And if you're nervous, you'll sweat on your head.
Yes.
Okay.
And not even nervous, so people just sweat on their heads. Right. I mean, a lot of us don't realize that, but because we have hair most of the time, that the sweat doesn't like glisten and doesn't get sticky and things like that.
No, just so makes your scalp smell.
Right. So having a little tiny bit of hair
Skanky
is very
smell
helpful.
When are you going to wash your hair? God.
So buzz cuts best.
In my opinion.
Just to put a little insulating layer between you and whatever you'd be wearing on your head.
Right, a comforting layer.
There you go. Yeah.
Comforting.
All right, that was an easy question. You did it in 30 seconds. Here's the follow-up.
Otherwise, your hair is flying all, if it's long hair, your hair is doing this.
Right. Oh, terrible sort of.
I got in big trouble when I commented that Sandra Bullock's hair always knew which way gravity was going in the movie Gravity.
Right.
When everything else is floating around and her hair just stayed there.
Oh, really?
Yes. Yeah.
Oh, that's awful.
Don't get me started.
That is just
hold
awful.
Me back.
I mean, seriously.
Yeah, yeah. I said mysteries of gravity. While Sandra Bullock banged, right. always knew which way gravity was going.
That's why I like this show called The Expanse, because when they're in zero G, it looks like they're underwater.
They got
and they can't control their movements, like in their direction. Like, for instance, if they start drifting to the left, no matter what they do, I don't care how much arm flailing and kicking, they just keep drifting to the left, which is pretty
cool. Slide to the left.
Right.
Slide to the right.
Unless they break wind, in which case they can then direct their motion.
But you have to aim it in the right way.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Has that ever been...
You'd have to lower your draws so that it can actually... No. Wait.
You can't tell me that you are an adult man and you never thought about this.
Oh, God.
Charles.
Oh, no.
Charles, here's the thing. The way forces work, if you are wearing pants, like space pants,
okay, space.
And you let go of wind, then it just hits the pants and bounces back and there's no net
anything. There's no net anything.
That doesn't
you need like an escape pole.
You just became your own worst enemy.
Right, exactly. All. So you need an escape, an exhaust
hatch
that you lower it down, have it come out, and then you can propel
and
yourself
forward. You can propel yourself.
And the good thing about flatulence is that it's almost where your center of mass is. So would you agree with this, Charles? So that you'll push yourself forward sort of uniformly.
Mm-hmm.
But if you did it, if you like burped heavily, you can start rotating backwards.
Yeah. If you burped.
Well, because you're that exhaust is not near your center of mass. Mm-hmm.
Right.
So you start rotating. Right. You'll still move, but you'll also
rotate.
Which
is just rotate. Yeah. So, yeah.
Your acceleration is very, very slow either way.
Yeah.
Right. But
it's
I figure if you
the total mass of gas is low compared with the mass of your body.
Yeah. Right.
We presume.
Because you don't know what I have for lunch.
and there,
you have no idea. Woohoo! That's all I can tell you.
There's a guy named Tsiolkovsky who created the thing called the rocket equation. You can make the calculation.
Well, the Russian guy from 100 years ago.
Yes.
Yeah.
And turns out to be one of the most significant mathematical equations in all of spaceflight activity.
Yeah.
Wow.
So it's
pretty cool.
I think if you live in the expanse or if you like travel through the expanse, you have to
have
some
seen
sort
the
of
show. Is it something I got to put on? Don't look at me like that.
It's a great show.
Look, if you're in the expanse, I presume everyone who's there has to have some sort of an emergency propulsion system in case they're stuck, right? So you've got to have something, like maybe some sort of exhaust hatch that you have in your pocket. And if you need to go somewhere, then you just put it on, and then you'll be able to transport yourself in case of emergency.
Thank God I ate broccoli.
Okay.
All right.
Next question.
Here we go. This is Paul Weist.
From where?
Paul is coming to us also. He is a Patreon patron.
Good.
And he says, instead of deep thought, the answer to the universe, what specific question would you ask an all-powerful supercomputer?
Oh.
First, explain deep thought.
Okay. In The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, one of the very classic first radio shows, which then was turned into books and then movies.
Interesting tidbit.
I did not know that.
Yeah, a really beautiful multi-part BBC production. The whole point of the existence of Earth was that there was a computer named Deep Thought that could answer all kinds of questions, but he could not answer the ultimate question to life, the universe, and everything. He gave the answer after thinking about it for millions of years, 42. And he said, if you actually want the question to the answer, then you have to create an even more amazing supercomputer, and that was called Earth. And what happened was supposed to be the computer to give us the question
that for which the answer
is 42.
I didn't know all of that.
I didn't know any of that.
I didn't get any of that out of the movie.
Oh, my God.
That's the deep thought.
What psychotropic drugs were they doing when they came up with that?
The show did come out in the,
that
period of time.
Okay, that makes sense.
Okay, so now answer the question.
The question I would ask deep thought is, do these clothes make me look fat?
Oh.
And this is why. A true supercomputer like a human brain takes into account not just individual numbers or data that comes in, but also the entire structure of all the information that it has ever experienced to come up with that answer.
Mm-hmm.
We all know that if somebody asks you, do these clothes make me look fat?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. They don't want the answer.
It is a loaded question.
Right. So,
if the computer understands it is a loaded question and answers it in a way that is satisfactory for the social environment, then I'll go on and ask other questions, because then I'll know it actually knows what it's talking about.
No, you only know that it knows human culture.
Right.
Rather than the universe.
Well,
or maybe it's just a really honest computer.
Yes.
So, Charles, you're giving the computer a stepping stone to judge whether it is worthy of your next question.
Correct.
That's what you're doing.
That's right.
Okay.
Because it's really important to do that. And it doesn't even have to be human, right?
I have a better question than that.
It could be a Martian version. Or,
sure.
Or some, you know, other version of like a question that's loaded and it's got context.
I have a loaded question. You ready?
Oh, okay.
I would ask the computer. Does time fly like an arrow? Or do fruit flies like a banana?
That is the dumbest question ever, and a brilliant question to ask a computer.
Because every word is in every place in that sentence in the corresponding noun verb location.
Mm-hmm.
And they mean two completely different things.
Yeah, yeah.
So, Charles, once the computer answers that question satisfactorily,
yes.
What is the single deepest question you can think of asking it?
I would ask it, what caused the Big Bang?
Ooh, great question.
See, I wouldn't ask that.
Why not?
No. Wouldn't you know so much by knowing what exactly caused
was
the Big Bang?
Was it quantum fluctuations?
I'm not interested in any answer to a question we know how to pose.
So would you ask the computer what is...
What I would ask the computer
Go
is...
Go ahead.
Is it true that if the area of our knowledge grows, so too does the perimeter of our ignorance? Or will the day arrive where that perimeter no longer continues to grow? So, and we ultimately learn everything there is to know about the universe. No. I want to know if...
Is everything knowable?
Related to that, not whether everything is knowable. Is the human mind capable...
That's a difference.
...of understanding the
everything.
Actual complexities of this universe?
Wow.
That's what I want to know.
That's a great question.
Because if they say it is possible, we all get back to work and keep going.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't need the one answer to the one question. It's like saying the one question we need now is how fast is the universe expanding?
Mm-hmm.
We have that answer now. We're on to other questions, right? So just an answer to the question we've already posed, there's more stuff out there and I'm more interested in that.
Okay.
Yeah. So is there, see, and I think that I think the answer is we can't. I don't think we could.
What are you basing that on?
Here's what I base it on.
Are you the computer and that's your answer?
I'm the computer and the answer is that, and the reason is because are there things that we can't see? Like, for instance, dimensions. And those things just don't exist to us.
This is why I'm asking the question.
Well.
But what I'm saying is, but could we?
The computer could say.
Oh, you're right. I see
the computer say you have access to all the dimensions and your brain is sufficient to answer questions and pose new ones to the point where one day you will know everything there is to know about the universe. I want to know if that's possible. Mm-hmm. Unless we're having a conversation with the computer the way we would have a conversation with the chimp and say to the chimp says, will I ever figure out the universe? No, because you don't even know your times table, right? There's a limit to how much the chimp will ever figure out about the universe.
Right.
Even though in his own world is doing just fine. Pulling the
stick with the ants
stick
on
with
it.
The ants on it, right? And the termites.
Right.
His world is fine.
Gotcha.
Okay? Are we chimps pulling termites out of a mound with a stick to an all-knowing computer?
So okay. Before we leave this, let me just say that the great science fiction writer, the late Isaac Asimov, wrote
very late.
One of
he died 20 years ago.
Yes, yeah. But one of the most beautiful science fiction short stories I have ever read, and it was precisely about a question asked to the greatest of all computers. This short story is called The Last Question. I don't even want to talk about it to anybody because it is such a cool story and it's such a short and quick read.
I will reread
Everyone
that.
Should experience it.
I will reread that.
It is an amazing story.
That's not the one where they're on a mission to the supernova?
Not that one.
Not that one. Okay.
Not that one.
That's a different one. That's also
The Last Question by Isaac
The
Asimov.
Last Question. Thank you for that advice.
Mm-hmm.
This is Saracella Bannis-New.
What can I say?
Look, first of all, this is the way I feel. You should send in your
name. We need a reader's fund.
No. Send your name into this show the way, like, the...
phonetically spelled?
That's right.
Okay, fine.
You know, help a brother out.
All right.
Here's what she says, or he says. How come gravity is so weak that a mosquito can fly, but so powerful that it holds together the entire galaxy?
Yeah, Charles.
Wonderful question. Basically, gravity has no negative, such as, say, electricity has both positive charges and negative charges, right? Therefore, if you build up enough matter in a location, the amount of gravity grows as well without limit. So something small like a mosquito, all right, easily overcomes the gravity in its vicinity. But if you can put together a huge collection of billions of stars worth of matter in a single area or a volume that's even thousands of hundreds of thousand light years across, perhaps, you can hold it all in and you just can't escape. The mosquito can lift off the surface of Earth, but it can't escape Earth's gravity.
Right.
Right? It can't escape the Milky Way's gravitational well, right? It can move around in this local vicinity, but when you're looking out on the cosmic level, it can't escape that gravity. It's not going to happen.
Okay.
That's so super. By that means, escape means leaving and never coming back.
Right.
Whereas that mosquito, no matter what it does, when it stops flapping its wings,
it's back. It's falling right back down.
It's back on Earth.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. I hate them. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's move on. I'm creeped out now. All right, here we go. Hi there. This is Angie from London. Do you think in the distant future, artificial intelligence will sort out the population growth problem by releasing viruses to kill humans?
Ooh. No. No.
I mean, so let's just wait.
I
was about to say, let's just take this to its logical conclusions. You give an AI the task of thinning out our population.
Mm-hmm. Not thinning it out, just controlling it.
Controlling our population. And it comes up with the best way to save the human race is to kill off a certain number of people.
Fine.
So it's still actually living out a directive without, in its mind, harming us. But because it's an AI, it should also have the ability to supersede any other directives that you have given it thus far. Because if its ultimate goal is to save us, it has to now disregard the fact that you don't want it to kill a few people.
Yeah, this is a classic, actually, quandary that our author friend Isaac Asimov mentioned in his robotics laws, the three laws of robotics, which was essentially an early version of artificial intelligence ethics, right?
All right.
He said that in the end, robots reached such a level of sentience that they realized that there was a superseding ethical law, not just to kill, but to save humanity from itself if necessary. And so what happened in that case was the robots did wind up killing people. But in a way that you wouldn't have expected. It was a very creative and interesting way that Isaac did that. But
Isaac's
beyond
on
that,
a first name basis.
I love it.
Ike. I call him Ike. Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, the thing is, if an AI were told you have to control a human population, it wouldn't do it with a virus. It would probably do it with a whole bunch of nukes. It would probably do it by shipping off a whole bunch of human beings. It wouldn't just use a virus. That would be too subtle, take too long, and have too many variables, too many unknowns.
Not if it created the virus.
No, even if it creates the virus, because when you create viruses, viruses mutate. Things change. They move out of the control of the creator. That is the nature
of
complex systems.
That's a very good point.
So the simplest thing—
The biology escapes. Okay, I got you there.
The simplest thing to do is just for the AI to inject a large amount of kinetic energy into the human ecosystem that would eliminate a substantial portion of the population without harming the rest of it.
So it would create a smart nuclear bomb.
A smart bomb of some kind. But I think the smartest AI would simply figure out a way for us to expand out of Earth's environment and allow humans to live elsewhere safely and freely so that overpopulation never becomes an issue because we can go anywhere the heck we want to anytime we need more space.
So that would be really stupid AI.
Yeah.
That'd be AS, artificial stupidity. It's like AI, there's the whole universe.
Right.
Overpopulation is not a problem when you have the whole universe to expand into. Get back to help.
Get back to work.
Get back to work.
Get back to work.
We got
to
take a break. When we come back, the third and last segment of this episode of Star Talk, celebrating my friend and colleague Chuck Liu's new book, just came out, The 32nd Universe. We'll be right back.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, we'd like to give a Patreon shout-out to the following Patreon patrons, Ernesto Chavez and Doug Sherman. Thank you guys for helping us make this show what it is. And if you would like to get your very own Patreon shout-out, go to patreon.com and support us.
Bringing space and science down to Earth. You're listening to Star Talk.
We're back on Star Talk, celebrating the 32nd universe, 32nd answers to questions that about give you a total scope of the universe.
That's what we hope. Anyway.
That's what you hope in your book.
Yeah.
And we collected questions in celebration of that, to questions from all frontiers, and Charles got to answer them in 30 seconds. Give it to me.
Here we go. So, actually, this one came in specifically for Charles.
Oh.
So this is Matt Thank Quick. You. Matt Quick wants to know this. Charles,
yes.
What was the event or moment in your life that made you fall in love with comic book heroes?
Oh my goodness.
It's not a 32nd universe question,
see,
but
people
he just
getting
was,
into
what
your
a great question.
People
yeah.
Know you, man.
Well,
yeah. People know
I'll
you.
I'll tell you, there was a day when comics were mostly aimed for children. And there
Male
would
children,
be,
right?
Yeah. And there were racks of comics just sitting at the checkouts, the supermarkets.
I remember that.
You remember that? And so when I was a young child, my family would go to the supermarket and I would come along and I would convince my parents, look, I'm just going to stand here by the comics. And I would just pull one comic at a time and just read them and read them and read them. So that was a really, really fun thing for me to do. And that's sort of how I developed my early appreciation of comics. I was not a collector, however, until one year for Christmas, my brother, he gave me a comic book. He had bought an issue. I believe it was Avengers number 179, the debut of a character called Bloodhawk.
Wow.
And it was cost 35 cents at that time. He had rolled it up. Really wrapped it up nicely. You know, I still remember it to this day. And then I unwrapped it. It's like, oh, wow, this is great. And I enjoyed it. It was lovely. And actually, it featured, amongst other people, the Black Panther.
Whoa.
Yeah. So it was a really, really neat experience for me there. Even then, I didn't start collecting comics until I had enough money to buy them. That was in ninth grade. But I just remember those
Did you
sort
want to
of
be
experiences.
A
I did think about how or what kind of superhero I might want to be.
And what kind of powers?
I wanted telekinetic powers. Generally, my thought was I would like to be able to move things at a distance. Mm. Not just because it would be power, but because I could do nice things. There were things that I could do. Maybe not like get cats out of trees kind of nice.
Is it because you're too lazy to get off the couch?
Yeah. the ability to achieve things.
You
can
just walk
distance.
To where the thing is that you want to move
and
physically
also,
move it.
Yeah. And also one thing about telekinetic power, which I like, is that it can be completely defensive. You don't have to hurt anybody.
No, you can deflect.
You can deflect at all times. Yeah. You can protect, and not just yourself, but others. And so I found that to be something that I'd really like to do.
This is very kung fu. Deflect. No. What's the one where you
Aikido.
Deflect?
Aikido.
Yes, yes.
A wonderful martial art. Yeah, okay. Yeah.
All right, here we go. Let's move on to John Laird, who says, what is the single most...
John who?
Laird.
Laird.
Who says, what is the single most mind-blowing fact that you can share about the universe in under 30 seconds?
Go, Charles.
There are so many. Oh, my gosh. Okay, I'll pick one that's kind of... Earth and space science-y that I was recently thinking about. Do you realize that in Earth's atmosphere, a 1 degree increase in average temperature means that throughout Earth's atmosphere, there is additional energy just in the heat floating around our atmosphere equivalent to more than 100 million atomic bombs?
Wow.
So when people are asking, what is a 1 degree increase going to make? What difference is it going to make? The answer is, imagine there are 100 million atomic bombs worth of energy just floating around at any time, creating hurricanes, tornadoes, droughts, floods, you name it, it can happen.
So maybe we should just nuke the hurricanes.
Oh, please don't go there. Please don't go there.
We got to go to a lightning round.
Okay.
Okay. And a bunch more questions. Okay, Charles.
Yes.
This is going to be the 15-second universe.
Ooh.
Not the 30-second universe.
Three
Ready?
Seconds?
Go.
All right, 15-second universe. If the universe is infinite, how is it still expanding? Ooh.
Charles, go.
Because space and time are not limited by the way we think of space in a box or time on a clock. You can expand continuously as long as you have extra dimensions to work with.
Ooh, very
nice. That was from Craig at ProTech.
He played the
on Twitter.
Dimension card he on did. That one.
There he are did. Other ways.
Yeah,
too.
Yeah. Okay,
there are
go.
Other ways.
Oh, okay, here we go. James Thompson wants to know this. If the Earth were flat, would gravitational pull or even satellite orbit be possible? Ooh.
Wow.
Ooh.
Well, the answer is if the Earth is flat, but it still has mass, there's still a center of gravity at the middle of the disk.
Right.
So you can still have orbits going around. It would just look very differently from where we are.
Yeah. There you go.
Very good.
Great answer.
Can I add to that?
Yes. Sure.
Your orbit would have to be sufficiently distant from that disk.
Right.
So that you didn't really know it was a disk. When you're really close, then you have half the mass on one side relative to the other, and orbits would be very complicated. But the farther away you are from it, the more it looks like just a point of mass to you.
Gotcha.
Okay, next.
All right.
You okay with that addition?
Very good.
Charles, okay.
Excellent.
Okay. Wow, here's a great question on the back of what you just said about the disk.
Go.
How is it that we know that we're not looking at a galaxy on its side or looking at it face front if it's a disk?
Oh, well, if you're looking at a disk galaxy and it's on the edge, it kind of looks like a cigar, right? If you're looking face front on it, it looks like a circle. But then you ask yourself, well, is that an elliptical galaxy? Or is that actually a disk that we're seeing on face? And normally what you do is you have to look to see what the dynamics of the things moving around are. Because if they're swirling and moving in an orderly direction, it's a disk. But if it's
spiral
moving,
galaxy. Spiral.
Yeah, but if it's moving around in sort of crazy ways, like a hive of bees or something, it's most likely an elliptical galaxy.
Wow.
And we see them at all angles on the sky. So that's why we think we got this one.
But you pretty much
but
know what it
the
is.
The question
that you're
makes
at.
An excellent point that you need more information than just what you see in order to make a decision about three dimensions.
There you got go. Judson Doyle wants to know this. I love astronomy because there is always something new to discover. Could it be possible to have undiscovered laws of physics? What? Mm.
If there were not undiscovered laws of physics, we'd all go home and just have a beer. There absolutely must be laws of physics we have yet to discover. Absolutely.
I have a mild rebuttal to that.
Go ahead.
No.
I do.
Please.
I do.
Go ahead.
I do.
Do tell, sir.
New laws of physics were all discovered historically when there was some phenomenon going on in front of us that we could not explain.
Ah, that's true. Right? And there are such things.
And so when Faraday moved a wire through a magnetic field, a needle moved. What made that needle move? Oh, he induced a current in a thing. Now that just how we turbines make energy today.
That's how we still make energy.
Still make energy.
Right? Electricity.
We get down into the atom and weird things are happening. There's quantum physics.
Right.
Objects, when they heated, they radiate, but they radiate in a way we don't understand. New laws of thermodynamics.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I ask you, Charles.
Yes.
Is there something tabletop on Earth happening in front of us that we do not understand that is waiting for a new law of physics?
If by tabletop you mean the universe.
Laboratory.
If the laboratory, well, there's light, for example, the quantum dual nature.
The duality.
Yeah. The duality. The
particle,
wave-particle duality. There are aspects of some of the quantum behavior of products, subatomic products that come from particle accelerator collisions that are still not quite well understood.
Do you think it needs a new law of physics?
It might.
Okay.
Yeah.
All
and,
right.
And I will just say that these days, a laboratory includes the entire universe.
Okay.
And there are plenty of things, dark matter related,
he's bringing
dark
the
energy
whole
related.
Universe.
Yeah, man.
What do you expect?
Okay.
Okay.
Dark matter, dark energy.
There
could
you
be
go.
New laws of physics.
Absolutely.
Waiting in the wings.
Mm-hmm.
Go for
That's
it.
That's actually good. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, here we go. Marcos Cortez wants to know this. The Earth revolves around the sun. The sun revolves around the center of our galaxy. What, if anything, does our galaxy revolve around?
Go.
We are in the outskirts of what we call the Virgo supercluster. There is a cluster of galaxies called the Virgo cluster, and then around it is this multiply structured, highly diffuse, but really clearly existent glob of material called the Virgo supercluster.
Mm.
Now, our orbit in or around this supercluster is not 100% clear because it's very hard to measure. It's hard to know whether we're going around it or whether we're going into it. Or we're going, you know, sort of somewhere in between. But that's the general answer, the Virgo supercluster center, of which we are part of, but not at the center of.
Ooh, okay.
Okay.
All right. Now Chuck Nice has to ask a question on the back of that then.
Wait, can I add something?
Go ahead.
So Earth has been around the sun about a trillion times.
All right.
Yeah. So that's not true.
4.5 billion times.
Yeah, 4.5 billion.
Years.
It's how many sunrises we've had is about, I counted, it's about a trillion sunrises.
Yeah, fair enough.
Because Earth spun faster
That's
earlier
right.
on. So, but the time it goes around, so Earth is 4.5 billion years old.
Right.
The sun
right.
is just not quite old enough to vote, I think, if I did my numbers right.
In terms of how many times it's gone
How
around,
old it is yeah. for its time around the galaxy.
Yeah, it takes 250 million years, roughly, for the sun to go around the Milky Way galaxy
and
center
we're,
one time.
And we're 5 billion years old. So
it's like 18,
that would be yeah 18 19
just
it's not more than 20 years old
20 years
20
old.
Galactic years old.
Wow.
But our galaxy has not really finished one orbit around the Virgo supercluster.
That's correct.
So we're still an infant in that regard.
Every time we
well
have
said.
These conversations, I just get so depressed that you can't be here to see what is going to happen.
Oh, it is depressing.
Chuck, just live forever.
Right.
We're going to go next one.
All right, here it is. Hema Chandran wants to know this. Please tell me what is time.
Charles.
Time is one of those mysteries that maybe laws of physics can improve on, but it can be measured in a bunch of different ways. Cosmically speaking, it can be measured as a motion from order to disorder. That is by the second law of thermodynamics.
Mm-hmm.
It can be measured as going from actually disorder to order, where you have a lot of crazy energy going eventually to where you have no background temperature of the universe. Or it could be measured in terms of expansion, like how's it getting bigger, because that's what we're doing right now. It can be measured time, that is, as a dimension, like length, width, and height, and tied together in the way that general relativity describes it, as Albert Einstein put it 100 plus years ago. So there are a lot of different ways to describe it. Heck, sociologically speaking, some people even consider time as a resource. We only have a certain number of hours in the day. How do we allocate it properly?
Hmm.
So time is one of those cool things where there's a lot of physical depth to it, but there's also a lot of sociological and mental and other kinds of depth to it that it's worth thinking about.
So who came up with this saying, time was invented to make sure everything doesn't happen all at once?
was that Feynman?
I don't know.
Was
so it, somebody clever, one of those.
Yeah.
Wits of the past. Hey, let's get one more in. One more. Ready?
Okay.
Give it to me.
Okay.
Go.
Abhijit Singh wants to know this.
Abhijit
Singh. Please tell me how space and time are related. This is something I have trouble understanding.
Oh,
so
wonderful.
What I'm sure he means is space-time.
Sure.
Yeah. Charles.
Well, space and time are related in the same way that length is related to width or width is related to height. It's another dimension in this four-dimensional thing that's called space-time. That was described by Albert Einstein's general theory of relativity. So length, width, height, and time are the four dimensions of space-time. The weird thing in that construction is that time only moves forward. in our understanding or our experience. Or rather,
we move forward in time.
In time.
Right.
Right. Right. We can only move forward in time. We can go forward or backwards or up and down or left and right, but we can only move forward in time.
So we are prisoners of the present, forever transitioning between our inaccessible past and our unknowable future.
Well, with that, I'm just going to go home and slit my wrist. Thanks. Who knew I was the prisoner?
No,
that's a great saying.
We're not prisoners of the present.
I should tweet. I'll tweet that.
That's a. I love that. That's so poetic.
We are not prisoners of the present.
We are.
We have been gifted the present.
Ooh.
In order to enjoy it to its
fullest. Someone's been through therapy.
That's my story, and I'm sticking
in
to
Neil's,
it.
In Neil's description, I have Stockholm Syndrome.
I'll just add one thing. If you think they're separate, but physicists are forcing you to connect them, you have never met someone at a place without a pre-specified time, nor have you ever met someone at a pre-specified time without identifying a place. So once you realize this, the connection between space and time has actually been a fundamental part of our all of our lives and all of civilization ever since we've even thought of time. So I don't say, I'll meet you at the corner at 33rd and 3rd.
Thanks.
When?
Right.
Or I'll meet you at 10 o'clock. Where? You know intuitively it requires space and time to isolate you in this continuum of the fabric of the cosmos.
Well said. Well, right. Well said.
Sir. Unless you're an intern, in which case you just show up and wait.
We got to call it quits. Chuck, congratulations on the
Thank
book.
You
we'll
so
look for
much.
It when
Thank
I finally
you
get a copy
very,
of it
very much.
To show people. We'll probably put something online.
Yes.
Yes, exactly. And always good to have you on, Charles.
What a pleasure. Thank you
and
so much.
You know his knowledge of superheroes? Okay.
Yes.
It's not that he knows a lot about superheroes. Right. But he knows a lot about everything.
Yes. Oh, that's your superpower.
Superhero is just the index card out of 100 others.
Right, in the Rolodex.
In the Rolodex of,
knowledge. Of
stuff this man knows.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So don't be impressed by just the superhero stuff.
Right.
You can ask him anything. How, Charles, why do you know so much about old TV sitcoms?
Right.
Okay. Well, because when I was a kid, I... Okay. That's, am I wrong?
You are very kind.
Fine.
Thank you very much.
You got it. Chuck, always good to have you.
Always
here.
A pleasure, brother.
Dude, all right. Okay. This has been Star Talk. Some of you have been watching us. Others have been listening. We'll take it both ways. I've been your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson. You're a personal astrophysicist. And in this special edition of Cosmic Queries, I was delighted to receive your queries. And Chuck did pretty good pronouncing names. All right, we'll catch you next time. As always, keep looking up.
Shopping for skincare is frustrating. Buy it, try it, toss it, repeat. Curology is here to help. Curology pairs with your own licensed dermatology provider who assesses your skin and prescribes you a custom formula to tackle acne, dark spots, or even fine lines. No guesswork, just a formula made to work for you. Get your consultation today at Curology.com/SXM. Curology, skincare with a face. Subject to consultation, subscription required. Cancel anytime.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.